Welcome to Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. This talk show addresses strategies for thinking in today's complex aviation world. Now, here's Rich Weber, Chief Pilot for the Jacksonville Sheriff's Aviation Unit and aviation speaker from Jacksonville, Florida, who is today's host.
Welcome back. Hey, I'm your host, Rich Weber, with the Florida Aviation Network, and we're broadcasting live here at the Howard Hughes exhibit in the Florida Air Museum, and I'm pleased to introduce my next guest, Steve Oliver. Steve, welcome. Steve is with the Oliver's Flying Service, and what a great bit of information and history and experiences that he's going to share with us.
Yes, sir. It's been a real long run, both in my flying career, which started at 12 when I was a professional pilot, air show pilot, and banner tour and flight instructor at 19, and have A&P and all that, and I've been doing this all my life. My history here is quite long. My wife and I started our first year here in 1982 with barnstorming, hopping rides, which we introduced. As I remember, nobody was doing it, so we brought our steerman over and started doing that.
What does that actually mean then by when you say hopping rides?
Barnstorming was the way, if you go back to following World War One, that World War One pilots and a few other people that knew how to fly could make a living. And one of the few ways they could make a living was taking an airplane out and getting people to come out, and they would sell them a ride. Normally, the way it would work is that they would go out and they would go over a city. Now, remember, we're talking early 20s, and there were no airports, and most people in America had never seen an airplane, literally.
Right.
And so they would come to town and they would do loops and rolls or whatever they wanted over the town to get everybody's attention. Then they would go out and land in a farmer's field.
Like, hey, I'm here.
Right. And they would, you know, typically they would cut a deal with a farmer. I'll take you and your family for a ride if you'll let us operate for a couple of days out of your field.
Excellent.
If he had a strapping young son that could carry 5-gallon gas cans from town, you know, to pour in his airplane, he would give him a ride at the end of time. And they would move from city to city, and that literally is what barnstorming is all about. And the barnstorming era lasted during the Depression and into the 30s. Hmm. And a lot of the airplanes that the people were using were either Curtis Jennys or they were called Standard J1s. They were both built in the teens. The Jennys became more popular with the military and everything, and the Great Waldo Pepper, but they also have standards in there. One of the three professions that my wife and I have is barnstorming, and like I say, we've been doing it here at Sun and Fun since 1982. We currently barnstorm in one of only 7 flying new standards that were designed and built specifically for the Gates Flying Circus to haul passengers. It carries 4 people our size, 4 adults in the front cockpit, plus the pilot. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
What time frame was that now with the circus?
Well, what happened was the airplanes that were built in World War One, the Jennys and the Standard J1s, were a wood-framed airplane. And in the mid-20s, the CAA, the predecessor to the FAA, decided that if it was a commercial operation, it had to be a metal-framed airplane. The largest barnstorming entity in aviation history in the world was Gates Flying Circus, owned by Ivan Gates, who was pretty sharp. When he realized he had to have a new airplane, he went to a famous designer of the day named Charles Healy Day and said, I want you to design and build me an airplane, or you design it, we'll build it, that'll carry 4 adults, operate out of short grass
strip
farmers' fields, be easy to repair. So this airplane is a big biplane. It's a 45-foot wingspan, 10.5 feet high at the center section, carries 1,400 pounds. The reason there are only 7 of the 62 or 3, we're not sure, that were built was because after the barnstorming era passed, flying became more popular and more people were used to it, and there was other things they could get jobs doing, you know, other than trying to eke out a living under a wing and going from city to city.
Right.
they became crop dusters because they carry weight, and the airplane doesn't care whether it's people or fertilizer.
Absolutely.
So over the years, basically, they all got torn up, almost all of them, and taken off the aircraft registry. So there's only a few even on the registry, and only seven flying. And most of those are what we call 100% restoration. My airplane, when I bought it, was literally a wagon load of worn out parts, none of which you would use to rebuild an airplane because the best part on there was worn out and 80 years old.
Yeah.
So using the drawings and everything from the Smithsonian of the original airplane, we were able to duplicate and completely rebuild that airplane. We call it 100% restoration. I guess technically it's 99% because the external baggage door right behind the pilot's seat is the original 1929 baggage door.
Well, that's pretty good. That makes it kind of a little bit of history there.
The heart, the soul, and the baggage door is there. But another very famous thing that happened here at Sun and Fun, Jimmy and Jesse Woods were known as the Flying Aces. They had some of the most famous aviators in the aviation, this kind of business, barnstorming, aerobatics and stuff, joined them as a troupe, and they toured. And Jesse was the stunt woman who rode the wing and did the parachute jumps. She was also a pilot and stuff. Jesse was lucky enough to be in her 80s and still very healthy, and she lived here in Florida. We go back to probably about 90, 91. And Jesse was a friend of ours. And when I bought my new Standard, my first new Standard, I called Jesse and I told her about it. She was so excited, and I said, would you like to go wing walking? Now remember, she's 82 years old.
Incredible.
But incredible health. And she said, oh yeah. So at this grass strip right here at Sun and Fun in 90 or 91, with Jesse on one wing and my wife on the other wing, we recreated barnstorming like it was 50 years ago. And if you look, I get goosebumps telling this story because in my entire career that it spans more than half a century, it was probably my most memorable flight. She's out on the right wing, and I had said, Jesse, there's going to be a truck with some movie equipment people in it and stuff, and I want you to look at them. They're going to be right beside us on takeoff on the grass.
Oh, they're going to be running right beside you.
Right.
Okay.
And there will be a couple people in the front cockpit, which is big, carries
right.
four. But I said, I want you to wave at everything, but as soon as you think about it, I want you to look at me and give me a high sign that everything's either okay or not okay.
Yep.
My wife's over there hanging on like this, because it's her first ride. Jesse hadn't been on a wing in 50
She's
years.
She's thinking, what have you got me into?
No, well, my wife,
yeah. Right. That's what I mean.
But Jesse is just waving and everything, and I'm really focused on her because the reality of it is she's still 82 years old.
Right, you don't want her to fall off.
Well, we had an argument on that. I insisted that we have a strap hooked to the flying wires to her.
Mm-hmm.
And she told us that in her career as the stunt person for the Flying Aces, that she had only been belted on one time, and that was the first ride. And she didn't give me the details, but she said it about killed me, and I hated it. And I never, ever did it again. She was untethered the entire time.
Wow.
For this flight, we could hit a little bird or it could have been anything.
So sure.
It made me feel better. But the point was that we're about 15 seconds into the flight, and we're starting to climb away from the truck, and I can kind of see Jesse remember that she's supposed to give me a high sign, and she turns and looks at me and throws me a kiss, and I just said, everything is fine.
You're right, you're good to go.
By the time we turned crosswind, she had broken into song. She was singing. And by the time we turned downwind, she was actually kicking her legs up and dancing and stuff.
Dancing, having a great time.
But the part that is so incredibly memorable for me, all of it, but what especially stands out is I saw a woman, 82, become 20-something again. I mean, 50 years went away, and she was back doing what she had done as a youngster. And later, in conversation on the ground, she said, "You know, Steve," she said, "when we were up there," she said, "it was like I was 20 years old again." She said, "It was just like yesterday."
Man, that's worth all. That was worth everything, wasn't it?
It was, and it was done right here. There's been a book written about it. Ann Cooper wrote a wonderful book about Jesse and the Flying Aces. Years ago, there was a national television thing called Eyewitness Video, if anybody remembers it. And this story with Jesse made national 3 years running. And
really?
she lived a wonderful life up into her 90s.
Into the 90s.
Yeah, a few little issues that they sometimes raise. But but that was a lot about. But we create, we like to say we share the magic of real flight, open cockpit flight. And with this particular airplane and being able to take four at a time, you can do like mom and dad and two of their kids, or you can do two couples that want to go together, or four people that don't even know each other. But I could honestly say in over 50 years of barnstorming, I have never had a passenger that got out of the airplane that didn't like it.
I can imagine.
And I've had more people than I can count that were going for their first ride in their life and stuff like that.
And everybody had a smile on their face.
That's right. But you can do it here. You can recreate it right here at Sun and Fun at the grass strip out in front.
That's incredible.
So that's part of what we do.
That is good. But you guys, also you and your wife, some skywriting and some history with Pepsi-Cola, right?
My wife was Pepsi Skywriter for a quarter of a century, flying their famous 1929 Traveler, which happened to be the airplane that Pepsi started with in 1932. They were the first company to use skywriting as an advertising medium. And they did it longer. They did it for a total of 7 decades. They wrote through the 30s, 40s, 50s, retired the program. As a quirk of fate, they went to find one of the old planes to put in a museum. They had no intention of having the rebirth of the Skywriter program. The fellow that had it is Andy Stennis, the fellow that invented and held the patent on sky typing, which you will also see here at Sun and Fun. It's five T6s flying together where there's a computer in one of them and receivers in the other, and it's like ticker tape, whereas we do the old style where you actually form the letter by the flight path, a letter at a time.
Yes.
The,
with it may be like with smoke or however means.
Oh,
that they
it's
use.
The same. It's the same smoke that an air show performer uses. It's just that we're so high. We're 8, 10, 12,000 feet where it's smooth and it tends to hang together. And we put out more smoke than most people. Sky typers, which we affectionately call paint by numbers, sky writing is often referred to as the lost art.
Yes, you have to actually fly the airplane and create those letters.
Well, you do, and everything, it's reverse. If you think about it, a letter for you, like an S for Sun and Fun, which I'll be skywriting if I get blue sky.
Okay.
If I put that above you where you have to look up, the plane is actually on the back side. So all skywriting is done what we call mirror image. It's from the first letter, but it's all letters to us or reverse. However, it doesn't really matter because it's horizontal. A lot of people think it's vertical.
Okay.
You can't really see what you're doing because it is horizontal and you're looking horizontal. And it's huge. I mean, the word Sun and Fun will be 3/4 of a mile from the top to the bottom and probably, it'd probably be 4 times as long, something like that. So it could be easily 4 or 5 miles long. But anyway, they retired that program in 2000, and that airplane, the 29 Traveler D4D that she flew for 20 years and that Pepsi flew for 7 decades, now hangs from the ceiling of the Udvar Hazy National Air and Space Museum.
Excellent.
In the air show section where Bob Hoover's airplane is on the ground and Art Scholl's chipmunk, and it's an incredible display of aviation. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of history right there, you know.
It is.
And it's just to think that airplane that she flew in is hanging up there in the museum.
Well, it's a good place for it. I think after 7 decades of spelling things in the sky and
being
as well-known as it is, if people remember, the second most popular Pepsi commercial they ever had was the Marry Me Sue commercial, where you see the two kids by the barn and the old man takes, well, that was actually Jack Strayer.
Ah.
The fellow that taught Suzanne.
Right.
And that was the airplane she flies. And it did the Marry Me Sue, and then it pans back to the kids. And Pepsi has told us that, they keep numbers.
Yeah.
And they have told us for years that that was the second best remembered commercial they ever had. The first one was the little kid with the little puppies.
Yeah.
That was rolling around with all the little puppies
right,
all over.
Yeah.
That was number one.
But
yeah.
Still, number two, what? That's a.
Yeah.
That's,
so a lot of history on her and that airplane, and she's out here too. So you can.
Oh,
meet,
excellent.
You can meet Suzanne.
That's great. That's going to be really good.
Then the other thing we do is, of course, I'm a daytime performer in my Super Chipmunk.
Yes, and, well, Eric, I was going to ask you about
and
that.
And I do daytime performances, aerobatic performances. But I also, in 1989, started Gene Soucy and I almost simultaneously, because we were both building our planes at the same time, started fireworks on airplanes.
I've talked to him about it. It's very.
And we're going to do that. They had a night show last night, and here at Sun and Fun, we'll have a night show again tonight.
That's going to be great. There's a lot of reasons to come out to Sun and Fun. Mr. Oliver, I'm sorry we've got to wrap it up.
Not a problem.
Listen,
I appreciate it.
You coming out, taking your time to meet with us, and telling us some about that. It's very interesting, and it's quite interesting to hear what all you've done in your career and your wife and where that's coming from. But we appreciate that.
Thank you. We've been pretty lucky.
Excellent. Well, listen, everybody, I'm your host, Rich Weber, with the Florida Aviation Network, and we're here at Sun and Fun 2013 here in the Florida Air Museum. Stay tuned. We're going to have some more guests in here that you need to listen up for.
We hope you've enjoyed today's Managing Safety, brought to you by the Florida Aviation Network, an effort of the National Aviation Safety Foundation and a coalition of local, regional, and national aviation organizations and agencies. Please visit our studio website to hear past programs.